Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture.
Let's think about what we said just a little while ago about virtues, and let's add a few more things. What is a virtue? It's a character trait, right? It's something that is more than just an action or an emotion. It's not just something that exists at one given point in time and then never exists again. If you say that somebody is generous, you're not just saying that they're generous right this minute. You're saying that you can rely on them to be generous over time, right? If you're saying that somebody is loyal, again, if you call somebody loyal and then the next minute they actually screw you over, you were probably wrong about them having a character trait of loyalty, right? Or something, you know, something really strange happened. So character traits are stable and they last over time. What else do we need to say about virtues? Well, one thing is that they do tend to be socially approved. That's an important aspect of them. The society always have the right understanding of these character traits. Not usually. It's got some sort of very general, vague notion of that. You know, what actually constitutes generosity? That's a question that you'd want to actually answer. Society can say, yeah, generosity is really good. But that's not going so far as to tell you what actually is good about it or what generosity is. There's more to virtue than just being stuff that's socially approved. But that's an important part of it. What else can we say? Well, how do you get virtues? You just sort of take a pill, and a red pill maybe for courage, and what should we make justice? Blue? That's nice, yeah. And then how about temperance? Maybe green?
White
for?
Wisdom,
okay, that's good, yeah. Just pop these pills, and now suddenly you're a good person. You've got it all squared away. I mean, you can actually take certain pills that will alter aspects of your personality, but not that much. And once you stop taking the pill, it goes away, right? Somebody's got anger management problems and you dope them up with something to keep them calm all the time. That works so long as their system's flooded with that. But then take it out and now they've got the same problems again. How do you acquire virtues? Well, it's through doing the sort of things that are characteristic of that virtue. Through behaving in a certain way. Like Plato says, if you want people to be just, they have to do just actions. And they're not yet just when they first start out. It takes like habituation. You have to get used to it. Just like when you learned how to do certain skills. It felt really weird at first. Remember when you learned cursive? First you learned how to print, and you probably liked that after a while. Maybe you didn't like it at first, but then after a while you're like, yeah, this is okay. I can print letters now. All right. And then they made you do cursive, and you're like, I don't want to do this. This feels really awkward. Why can't you just let me alone so I can just print? I don't need cursive. As a matter of fact, it looks worse than, they came up with all sorts of justifications why you didn't want to do it. I know I was a real pain when it came to that myself. And then I showed them, actually, I mixed cursive and printing together, which nobody could read. Well, what happened after a while, if you stuck with it?
Your cursive got better.
Your cursive got better. Did it feel better? Did it quit feeling like an imposition? What about exercising? If you let yourself get out of shape, what's that first week when you decide to get yourself back in shape like? Or any of you who have been on a sport and then you were doing conditioning for a while and then you let it go, and you were still in good shape, but you weren't doing like the workouts for that sport, what's it like that first week? Yeah, it's terrible, right? What's it like the second week? It's still not great, right? But it's a little bit better. What's it like a month from then?
Perfect.
Really? No. Well, that's good.
It's easy.
Really?
It does get easier, yeah. I suppose when I was your age, yeah, I could have that like bounce back kind of thing.
Yeah.
Tougher now. But you get the general idea. Virtues are like that. Virtues become something that becomes part of you over time by you actually committing to them and doing certain things. And it doesn't have to necessarily be conscious. If you want children to be virtuous, you don't, go to them and say, okay, little Johnny, first we're going to work on justice this week. Now, justice is this. and I want you to behave this way and this way, and here's what Plato says about it. You just make little Johnny actually behave in just ways, and you know, you try to curb some of it, and it, with enough repetition, eventually it starts to become, like Aristotle says, second nature. You want somebody to be generous? Model generosity yourself, right? You want somebody not to be a kid who loses their temper immediately? You got to learn how to restrain your temper if you have a bad temper, because modeling is important. So, you know, education, practice, modeling. Do you have to worry about the culture that you're in? Yeah, you have to worry about that, because they're getting models and education through that culture too. And those may be going against what you're trying to inculcate. Now, these virtues, so that's a lot about virtue itself. What are the virtues that Plato talks about? He talks about three right off the bat that connect with these parts of the soul. And wisdom, I think that's a word we can all wrap our heads around pretty easily. For somebody to be wise means more than just possessing a lot of knowledge, right? It means that they can actually think out well what is good for them, what is good for other people, what a given situation requires. Here's an example of maybe something that would require wisdom. Should you stay in your major or not? You can ask yourself, am I happy in my major? And then you can ask yourself, should I stay in my major or not? Is that going to fulfill me with the kind of person that I want to be eventually? You're thinking about that, you know, with your intellect. And these other parts may be involved. I mean, maybe you consult your desires and say, I'd like to make a lot of money. That's important to me. Well, that's one of the appetites. Or you say, I would like to be respected. That's thumos. Those aren't, you know, to be gotten rid of altogether. But the actual thinking about it is done by your intellect. And when your intellect is functioning well with that sort of thing, then you actually have wisdom. How do you think you get that way? You have to do a lot of thinking. The more thinking you do, provided it's thinking, you know, along the right ways, thinking about the right things, the smarter you'll actually get. Here's one, you know, sort of thing that Plato doesn't talk about, but you should probably think about. If you want to become wise, look for other people who are wise, and then hang around with them a lot, and think about the things that they say and do, and eventually you'll start to take on that pattern as part of your personality. That's enough about wisdom. What about courage? What do we think of courage as being?
Bravery.
As a synonym. What does bravery mean, then?
It's like doing something in like a case of danger or like something adversity, and you like do it anyway.
Yeah. So danger and adversity, and how does danger and adversity make us feel?
Well,
that's interesting, because courage, at least for Plato and for Aristotle, doesn't mean the absence of fear altogether. Yeah.
I was going to say it's like the absence of fear for yourself.
No, you can't still be afraid for yourself. It does involve not feeling like, you know, being flooded with it, you know.
I mean, like, you're in an uncertain situation, but you still live with it.
Say that one more time.
You're in an uncertain situation, but you still go through with it.
Okay, yeah, that would tie with the danger and the other fearful things, possible harm to you, yeah.
I would say it's the strength to face your fears.
Okay, that's, now we're getting something that's a bit more robust. The courageous person can feel fear. They're not going to feel too much of it, in part because Plato says that courage is actually, it does involve knowledge to a certain extent. It's like a right assessment of how scared should I be. So if you see a spider, and it's not a brown recluse, and you are like, you know, trying to climb the wall, there's something wrong, because that's a disproportionate amount of fear of a little thing that's not going to do anything to you. Brown recluse, okay, maybe be afraid of that, because, you know, that can actually hurt you. But most spiders are going to leave you alone unless you go and like poke at it or something like that, right? And you're not going to do that. But a lot of people have these kind of phobias. And what's a phobia? It's an undue, disproportionate fear. The courageous person knows what they ought to be afraid of, and then when they feel the fear, they actually, like you said, they stick to what they're doing. They have that activity. That's why it's part of this part of the soul. Part of the soul that has drive, energy, desires, self-respect. What's one way to make yourself respected by other people? Behave courageously. Stand up for yourself. Do things that are kind of tough. And what happens when you actually stand up to your fears? What have you experienced?
They go away.
They go away in part because you realize, well, this really wasn't that bad. And you start to gain a sort of sense of confidence, don't you? What about this? Now, this is interesting, too, this temperance or moderation. This is a little bit different than wisdom or courage. Plato talks about this in two different ways. He talks about it as being kind of a harmonizing things, and he also talks about it as sort of an obedience in a way. Then he also talks about limits. So think for a moment just about your desires, all the things that you want. This goes back to that ring of guidance thing. Boy, if you had that ring, imagine the things that you could do, all the things you could indulge yourself in. Let's say we added to it unlimited wealth or something like that, right? And transportation device put you anywhere you want. Make it any time you want, right? Just think of the crazy things that you might want, that you might desire. What happens to our desires if we don't have limits on them? Do they limit themselves?
They can.
I mean, that run out.
Yeah, I guess they can limit themselves in that after they're satisfied and they're done. But if you keep indulging them, doesn't it sometimes take more and more to satisfy? Mm-hmm. If you don't have limits. Like, think about food, for example. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you leave a bowl out for a dog, like, he'll eat it. Like, if you just keep filling it out.
Yeah, I had a cat, actually. No, he was still a kitten. And I came back from the store, and I left, like, you know, ground beef in the sink. He ate. And this was, like, a 5-pound kitten. He ate close to a pound of ground beef. I don't know where he stuffed it. But I knew how much there was because, you know, a good portion of the package was gone. And, it, you know, maybe he was sick afterwards and all that. Not smart behavior, right? What happens to you if you don't restrain your food intake within certain limits? Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, like, if you don't restrain your desires in general, it could affect your, like, rational thinking. So then it would affect the other part.
Ah.
A different virtue.
Now you're actually on to something which brings us to the question of justice. Justice, Plato says, is the virtue. It has to do with the proper arrangement between these parts, when they're actually in harmony with each other. You're right. If you don't restrict your desires within certain reasonable limits, if reason is not calling the shots, those desires are not going to restrict themselves. And Plato says they will grow. And what they will do then is then they will start telling reason, hey, I want some more of this. Find me how to get it. I don't care what you need to do. Find me what I, you know, what other things will get me to where I want to be. Think of the addict who actually is, they're just thinking about where to get that next fix. They're not thinking about, you know, is this good for me? Is this a good life? Is this what I want to do? For that, so long as that desire is, you know, in charge, they're thinking about what can I do to satisfy this? And the more that you do that, one second, the more that you do that, the more your character will come and take on that sort of configuration. The way Plato thinks it ought to be. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, could this be connected to, like, Freudian psychology?
Some people, that's a good question. Some people want to read this in terms of superego, ego, and id. That doesn't work so well for the top two. It works good for the desires. The desires and the id, yeah, it's basically the same sort of thing. The ego is not exactly the same thing as thumos. Ego would also be partly up here. And superego is basically internalized commands, injunctions from other people. Those could be like desires. You might have your desires because you internalized some things that mom and dad told you need to do, according to Freudian theory. Yeah.
Theoretically, the ego would fall more into justice because the ego is more the balancing act between society and yourself.
A good ego.
Well, yeah.
Good ego. But
so
if you're,
then it would, like, be more justice than the other two anyway.
Yeah, if your ego is disordered, you wouldn't have justice. This is the last thing I'm going to say. So what's the proper order? Intellect should be giving the commands to everything else. Because either the desires or appetites by themselves can lead us astray, or this spirited part of the soul, you know, that can lead us astray too. It can lead us into fights. It can lead us into trying to do whatever it takes to, you know, be on top. Love of victory, that sort of thing. So the intellect ought to tell both of these other parts what to do. It's interesting here. This is a very important mediating part. Intellect by itself, in Plato's view, is not strong enough to directly impose its rule on the appetites. You need the conjunction of this middle part. Courage then becomes, in a way, standing up to your own desires and not fearing what's going to happen if they're not satisfied. And if you have that sort of configuration, then you have justice. And Plato says, this is what I'll leave you with, Plato says that we can look at all sorts of things that we call justice. Those are external acts, like not lying, not stealing, not cheating on your spouse, those sorts of things. What do they come from? They come from within the person. The just person has something within the structure of their personality, or their soul, if you like, you know, more theological language, that restrains them, that keeps them on the right track. And that's what justice is.
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.